You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
What's a hottie to do when a demon from his past needs him to help take over the world? Sci-Fi for Chicks finds out in this Sleepy Hollow podcast, Hot Mess.
I thought that was a joke when they said we were doing karaoke, because it's something that the writers and Nicole and I had always joked about.
I got to let loose a little bit in character, which is a strange thing, because I was like, I personally like doing karaoke, but how would Abby do karaoke? It's like drastically different from sort of my nerdy showboating that I would probably do.
As I was a-walking down by the Lark Hospital.
We had lots of discussions about what Ichabod should sing, and then I suggested an 18th century sea shanty called A Young Sailor Cut Down in His Prime, which is about syphilis. And I thought, this is perfect.
Hello and welcome to our third episode in the 2015 Sleepy Hollow podcasting marathon catch-up. This is Heather, and I am joined yet again by my friend who I have not heard from in so long. Alex, I've missed you very much. Hi, Alex.
Hello, everybody. Are you ready for the final episode? Well, final for the marathon.
Of this marathon.
Yeah.
We'll have another week before the next one comes out, because next week I have a really packed schedule, so we will be recording late next week on purpose, because what the whole Alex being in the future and trying to coordinate things, it gets a little messy sometimes with trying to record.
Bit.
So purposefully the next episode is going to be later in the week, but we will get that to you as soon as possible. But right now we are going to start talking about Sleepy Hollow Season 2, Episode 14, I hope I have that right, Kali Yuga, which I was very remiss in the last episode. I did not look up what the heck, I don't want to get us a explicit rating. I don't know if that counts. What pittura infamante meant, which was Italian for defaming portrait. So there you go. I've caught up on my bad
and
for not getting
Kali
last week's.
Yuga.
And Kali Yuga really goes along with this episode. I mean, it's at least they're better than Orphan Black, where it obviously matches. They're just getting all fancy schmancy. Kali Yuga is the age of the demon Kali, or the age of vice. It is the last of the four stages the world goes through as part of the cycle of yugas. And we want to make sure that you know this is the demon Kali, not the goddess Kali. So you've had your little Hindu lesson. You're Hindu and you're Hindon't. No?
Okay.
Not at all? Not at all? Okay, well, I thought it was kind of fun. yeah, you guys don't understand. When we're talking about marathon podcasting, we mean marathon and not necessarily for you.
Oh, yeah. This is our fourth hour of talking about Sleepy Hollow. And let's just say it's... we have not drunk any alcohol, but it's getting to a point where we might as well have.
Hey, Alex, why haven't we been? It's a Saturday. We should have been. Why weren't we?
I don't know, and it didn't even occur to me to spike my tea. I am disappointed in me as an adult human being. It's like, I am disappointed in myself, but it didn't even occur to me to spike it up.
I'm disappointed too. Yeah, it's disappointing to me as well that I didn't think of it. Because, I guess that'll just be for the next one.
Hmm, yeah, so, maybe next time.
So we can keep up the standard of this podcast. You know, the next one will sound very much like this one. Because we will have had a little something there. Let's go ahead and get started into this episode. We have, in Kali Yuga, we're really going to be seeing some more stuff with Hottie and Abby and Crane and all of them, but we're going to start where the last episode really kind of left off. Let's go ahead and start with Frank and his wife Cynthia, and something that actually I think we had talked about at one point too is getting Katrina into a different storyline a little bit, letting her have some outside of Crane and Abby. And so we have her in there too. And I think this was a really fun, I don't think that's a good word to use for this, an important aspect to the storyline, because we've had Frank be this pillar throughout this entire story so far. I mean, he was the one that they let him in on this whole thing, and he took it in stride, the whole demons and apocalypse and Moloch, unlike how Reyes would probably take him. He's, can you imagine Reyes if he told us, by the way, sorry I was late for work that day. I was trying to destroy Moloch.
Yeah, kind of hard to explain. That's going to work out.
And but even when he found out that he had signed that contract with Henry and he had handed over his soul, he was still taking everything pretty much in stride. And now that he has this missing 6 weeks, he didn't know that Moloch was destroyed. He didn't even know he had killed the horsemen of war. Well, at least the suit had no recollection, and he stumbled back in. And as far as he knows, he's still Frank, and he's trying to convince Abby that he's still Frank, and he's trying to convince Cynthia that he's still Frank. I like that Frank actually didn't have any interactions with Crane in this, that it really did stay with the women that were closest to him, and then Katrina, because she could help. I liked that, and I'm wondering if that's going to play into it. How did you like this? I mean, we start with Frank in the courtroom. Well, you know, usually Crane has these really great lines, and Frank had this really great line when the judge asks him about his counsel changing, because previously his counsel was Henry. And I love how Frank just so deadpan goes, well, you know, went with outside counsel because last one didn't go so well.
It was such an understatement of the year. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. But I have to tell you, I felt a little thrown by that turn of events for Frank. How suddenly things were magically working out for him. Mm-hmm. Like he said at the very end, I guess we have our miracle. And that's how I felt through the entire courtroom scene. I was like, is this really that easy? I mean, what's the catch? Where is the catch? Because there has to be a catch. I couldn't really believe that this was this easy. Come on, no. It's never this easy. Where's the catch?
Right.
Why can't I see the catch? And it was through the entire scene in the courtroom, that was what I was concentrating on. Like, where is the catch? I was like completely freaking out, even though things were going my baby's way. But I was so freaked out. Like, well, this is...
And that started with the end of the last episode when Reyes says, yeah, he's been exonerated. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
What? Just out of the blue, he's been exonerated. I mean, Abby wasn't fighting to exonerate him. Crane's been, in the last episode, was busy with Katrina doing this whole thing. Jenny was busy pulling platinum bullets from the gates of hell out of a zombie and not realizing she needed to leave one in there. Everybody was pretty busy. So how did Frank get exonerated?
Who delivered that so-called evidence to the DA? What is going on? I was so thrown by that. Probably. But I actually like that they didn't explain it right away. That they are drawing it out and torturing us like the sadistic bastards that they are. I like it, and I enjoyed every single moment. Well, I always enjoy Irving scenes because I absolutely adore him and love him to pieces. But I enjoyed the little sneak peek into his family life in a way, into his family's dynamic in that evening with Cynthia. And then when they thought, hey, we are actually getting a miracle out of it, you know, and this joy and relief that Cynthia felt and that Irving felt, it was It made me go, aw. I'm still suspicious, and it's going to come back and bite them in the butt,
It was really great, because really the only looks we've seen are when he, you know, was dealing with his daughter being possessed, or with some minor little things. This is, again, we were kind of talking about this in the last episode that we recorded weeks ago. how Frank, you know, we pulled Frank out of this mold of just being the good guy captain, that, you know, this role in the police force thing. He's now this really complex character. We loved him as Frank Irving in season one.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt for him at the beginning of this season, especially when Henry tricks him into this, just like Katrina now is taking charge of her life and has these, you know, these different things. She's doing things on her own. I'm seeing so many doors opening for, okay, Frank isn't going to be just on the Abby Crane bandwagon. He's got so many other things that are coming up that I think Abby does see. She's suspicious and she's going to be on the watch for it.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else, I think, is going to be lulled, and we're going to get hit with something big. And I really think that Irving is going to be huge in the season finale that we have just 4 episodes from now. I think he is going to be huge. The finale that I believe is airing on my birthday. So anybody out there on my birthday, if you want
make
to send
sure
birthday wishes or candy.
Season finale is big because it's Heather's birthday.
It's my birthday. So I want a big birthday prize. Skinny jeans. But that's... Sorry. I really think that Frank's story is just going... It's going to have so many more dimensions now.
Mm.
And just that question of, yeah, who got him out? Who presented this evidence? Cynthia just found out, his wife, just found out he was still alive from Abby in this last episode. And I like, too, that... None of them are just completely blinded by the fact that Frank, my good friend, my husband, the father of my child, they're not all blinded by, you're back, big hugs, welcome home. You know, she's, even Cynthia, has questions, and she is suspicious, and she listened to what, you know, Katrina was saying, maybe she could do something to help out. Was it Katrina that originally mentioned that, or was it somebody else that mentioned to...
Jenny said that Jenny. Katrina could maybe do a mystical exam.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Jenny was saying that to Abby about how we have doctors that can check out and make sure he's physically okay, because heartbeat was fine and pulse was all the everything else physically was fine.
Mm.
And yeah, smart Jenny, because she's still got her pulse on the whole thing here, suggests Katrina. And I like that Katrina is in this story totally apart from
everything else. Yeah.
Everybody else. And it made sense. It really did make sense. I thought it was a little quick, her little circle thing with him, and a quick little incantation and things. So, but the look on her face made me say, is there something else she's thinking of? Because she saw those flashes of Henry and such. There's
something
else going on with
telling.
Her. Yeah. I think she believes that, what was it that she had said, that she didn't sense any...
Henry has not had nothing to do with bringing Irving back.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's sensing that, which
and
I
Henry
still kind
has
of
no
wonder because...
on his soul anymore.
Yeah. I still kind of wonder, because he did sign that thing, and they've made such... They hit us over the head with that so many times, him signing that contract. That's got to be something more, but... There's something else going on with Katrina.
There's a tiny bit of me that's hoping against all odds that this is Irving's reward for sacrificing himself in this final battle. But the bigger part of me,
Alex, really?
That's the little tiny piece that adores Irving and hopes for the best for my poor little baby. But there's the bigger part of me that's me, and that's cynical and realistic and come on.
Well, because Alex,
no,
in my notes, in my notes here, my infamous notes that I have on every episode that I sometimes use and sometimes don't, and maybe you can tell and maybe you can't, right after I note that Kat and Frank, you know, how Katrina seem to be more concerned about Henry and doing this whole little dance thing. The next note I have is, be careful about promises of a new chapter. So there wasn't even anything. You what did you have hope that this was a happy ending for your Frank for what, like 2.5 seconds before we have the hug?
Hope
the hug of doom?
All odds. Hope against all
hashtag,
odds.
Hashtag hug of doom.
I know. So I said it's a little, really tiny part of me that hoped for 2 seconds. But hey, I know how things work, you know. If you can hurt somebody, you hurt them. Just come on, those are the rules. But hey, one can still hope that my poor little baby ends up like happy with a happy ending and possibly not maimed, dead, or I don't know. But still, that final hug of doom, as you call it, it's been, well, my reaction to it was, well, of course. Like, duh.
What?
Something's wrong. And I do wonder what Katrina isn't saying, because I have this overwhelming feeling that she did not tell him everything. She answered his direct question of whether or not Henry still has a hold on his soul and if it's because of Henry that he's back. But there's no way she doesn't know more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wouldn't take so much preparation, like there was the circle and the candles and he had to drink something. There had to be something more. She has to know something that she's not telling us, which, Katrina, hello, I thought we were buds. I always defend you. Why would you hide stuff from me?
These scenes, I think, were really great, because if you look at the time, the actual amount of time in this episode that was spent on the Frank, Cynthia, Katrina stories here.
Mm-hmm.
It really, time-wise, if you add it up, was not that much, but it was such an important and a great way to set up for, obviously, the future, something that another show we podcast on really needs to take note of Gotham, about how you set up a future story with teaser scenes and things. Gotham, Barbara. They did it so well that these short little scenes, I'm going, there's something more that Katrina is not telling us, because like you said, she was being very, almost like courtroom-like. Answer the question that's in front of you. Don't tell me all this other stuff. Yes or no.
Exactly.
Kind of thing. And she was just like, nope, he doesn't. I know all this other stuff that you don't know that I've got to find out. And she was definitely more concerned about Henry, which I understand, but the problem at hand in front of you. So that does still kind of show, I think, where her mind, not just her heart, we know that her heart would lie with her son, but where her mind and her motivations are going to lie.
Yeah.
And then we're left with that question at the end when Cynthia's like not as ensconced in the whole demon supernaturally type world, to get that just because you've got this one clean bill of health, that does not mean happy hugs, beginning of a new chapter, because that move, you know, turning when they turn and we see in the mirror, you just see her, you don't see him. What is he? I mean, classically, who cannot be seen in a mirror would be a vampire.
But something from the underworld.
Yeah.
So he might have not returned completely untouched, so to speak, by the darkness. And even though Henry, that's the thing, even though Henry doesn't have a hold on his soul, the contract, like you said, the contract does not disappear. And I'm wondering whether or not they're doing something similar to what the writers did on Supernatural, where the contract on one of the main characters' soul got transferred up the food chain. From this lowly demon to the king of hell. So I'm wondering whether or not they did something similar to that on Sleepy Hollow, where Irving's contract changed hands to something bigger and badder and something we do not want to see. No, we do. We really do.
I do. But, I want to see it.
Objectively, oh, and, you know, my poor little baby, we don't really want to see. But yeah, we do. Oh my God, we do.
We do. We want to see. We do. We want to see. Well, because we've had now 3 episodes coming back from the mid-season finale without Henry, yet John Noble is still in those opening credits. So, mm-hmm. and we saw in the first half of the season those flashes that Irving had of this apocalyptic kind of battle thing with him with the headband and the fire and brimstone and all that. And I don't think that's something that we've averted. First off, on a technical standpoint, they wouldn't spend the kind of money to do those scenes for those quick little bits. You know, there's a reason yeah. that those scenes were in there and that they filmed those scenes. And as we're getting closer to the finale, I mean, we've let Orion go. We've let Headless go. We have Henry, who knows where. We have Irving that has come back from who knows where as who knows what. We have, and we still have the Frankenstein monster out there who was just let go. I see us having, unlike the end of season one, where it was actually a very small personal battle between a father and his parents kind of a thing, and Abby going into purgatory, this is going to be explosive.
This is going to be a
literally
showdown.
And figuratively.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be, this is going to be huge. Happy birthday to me, I'm already guessing. On this one. Something else that was kind of a wonderful present for me. We're going to kind of dissect the rest of this into some characters. And even though this is the beginning and the end of this episode, we're going to mash it together. Present for me was our whole karaoke moments. First off, Miss Nicole Beharie, she got some pipes.
Oh, yeah. I was like, wow, okay, let's do a musical episode with Sleepy Hollow because you girl can sing.
Yeah, we need the musical version of, or at least the album. Yeah, she was doing some good, crazy there. I was quite impressed. And then, of course, karaoke-wise, you then have the juxtaposition with Crane doing his shanty.
Let me just tell you how painful it was for me to listen to Crane sing both times. Both times. My ears were bleeding. Tom Meissen, darling, I really love you. Probably not as much as Heather does.
No, not as much.
But please, I am begging you, in the name of all that is holy, do not let them make you sing ever again, because you are pretty and a great actor, but singer you are not. And
hey,
you
now,
should
I'm gonna
not
go
quit
into the
and change careers anytime soon. Just no
I'm way. I'm going to go with what they said there. You know, the talent is there. He just needs some new material, and we get the new material at the end. It was really, I like the juxtaposition of Abby doing her song and being all, you know, crazy, and she's this, you know, got this great siren, the moves and the vibes, and he gets up there and he's just very stoic and doing his shanty and something from his time period. And even when he was trying to pick out a song, okay, well, we got to go back again. When he's trying to pick out what his song is, oh, this was almost the title of this episode. It was almost the title when he was like, oops, I did it. Again, I want to see you sing that song so much. And then following that later with, I mean, I would pay to hear Crane sing all about that bass. I would pay because I'm all about that bass. I love him. I love him. That was just fabulous. A few drinks and it'll be great. But
if Tom Meissen isn't asked to sing Oops, I Did It Again at the next Comic-Con panel, I will be sorely disappointed in fandom. Fandom,
I don't know, I kind of want to say all that.
Do not disappoint me. Have someone ask him to sing Oops, I Did It Again at a panel where I can see it and watch it and rewatch it and rewind it, even though my ears will no doubt bleed. I will love this. I will love the person who asks forever.
We need a mashup of Oops, I Did It Again and All About That Bass with all of, like, the video and him doing some stuff, you know,
yes,
like, in his revolutionary garb. And I, oh, please, crew, do something on, you know, behind the scenes, in between scenes while you're filming
something.
Those are
the DVD with extras. Those are the DVD extras that
yes,
we
please.
Will pay everything for.
We are requiring this of you, to make this music video of Ichabod Crane doing a mashup of Oops, I Did It Again and All About That Bass. I would pay for that. So he's still trying to stay in the moment with Britney Spears and Meghan Trainor, but he ends up singing a shanty, and they're still very separate. They're still showing very much in their separate lives. Let's go ahead and flash to the end real quick. When he's got, oh, you learned my shanty. And she's like, nope.
No.
I think it's time for a new song. And they get up there to do a duet, which shows that what they've gone through in this episode, which we'll talk more about in a minute, everything that they've gone through, all these divisions that they've had in the last few episodes, they are just like Katrina and Ichabod were coming back together from date night. They're coming back together as she says, we're doing a duet. This is how we roll. This is what we do. And we're going to do a little Proud Mary. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. And I liked, even though I really, really didn't like the singing here, I liked how they didn't make it polished. Because mm-hmm. sometimes when you have characters perform, they suddenly know when each will pause and the other comes in, and everything, yeah. you know, is synchronized and choreographed and works so well, even though sometimes, you know, they are not singing at the best of their abilities. But here it was so undiscussed, so to speak, like undecided of how they're going to do it. And you could see that they were looking at each other for cues to be able to tell when mm-hmm. the other one comes in. And I loved this kind of cooperation or working together, even in something so tiny and little like a duet. Really, it was precious. And I liked it. I liked how raw and unchoreographed, unprepared it was. I really did.
Yeah, it really was. It was fun. They were having fun with each other again, and they were connecting
yes.
that way. And just like how Crane and Katrina have, you know, we know all of this about each other. We are married. We know all this stuff, but we know nothing about each other. So we're going to start at a nice, fresh, clean square one. Just a square over from where we were, but we're going to start here. That's what Abby and Crane are doing. They're having, it's like, we've got to have some fun in this. I mean, we've been spending so long being so focused. What was that, a couple episodes, you know, ago when he was talking about where is his place in a world that doesn't have this apocalyptic doom hanging over him? What is his place? And now it's a way for him to actually find his place with his family, friends, his group, his pack, his tribe, you know, that, and make those connections that aren't just about we're connected because we're witnesses. Mm-hmm. We're going to be connected because we want to be connected. And it was just lovely. And he's got a nice little bass there.
But not only that, I felt like after they managed to defeat Moloch, they allowed themselves and allowed the situations to pull them apart.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a conflict kind of way, but in a basic, let's split up kind of way, mm-hmm. or let's not spend, because coming up to the great fight with Moloch, they were basically spending all their days together. All mm-hmm. the time that they weren't asleep, they were together. They were doing yoga, which apparently Crane refuses to go back to. They were hanging out, they were drinking, and they were, you know, in the archives, but they were all the time, they were together. And suddenly, after Moloch is gone, even after Katrina came back, they were still always together. But then suddenly, after Moloch is gone, during those 6 weeks that we know nothing about, and then later on in the episodes that we've seen, they didn't spend so much time together, and I don't know if you noticed, we didn't really have so many Ichabod Abbey scenes that weren't about mm-hmm. the case, right? But just them hanging right. out. They were always either with somebody else, or they were, those scenes were so rare, far between. And I think it was just like Abby said, that they need to, you know, go back to working on their bond, because it's something they need to tend to, and they need to hang out, and let's yeah. go sing. And it was precious. And
well, it played out in the episode, too. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know that we jump around a lot and we're nowhere near this part of the story, but it applies very well with where we're talking. When they do get trapped down, you know, when they're at that party and Crane gets sidetracked by the Knox guy because of his Daryl Dixon crossbow. And he makes this nod to Abby, and she takes it as, you go on, I'll catch up. And he's meaning it as, I've been sidetracked, wait for me. And so it ends up that she's almost, you know, in great peril, and they're just not communicating. And they have those moments, and especially when they get locked in that vault, of not realizing that they're assuming things, and they don't really know what's going on, and they're not playing as a team. They're not even playing anywhere near the kind of cohesive unit that they used to be. They're misreading everything, misinterpreting everything. They're assuming things. They've been on their own paths that they thought were running parallel, but they weren't. They weren't even on tracks next to each other. They were both going on, you know, yeah. willy-nilly everywhere. That was a great scene when like they basically call each other on it.
Yeah, one thing I kind of I didn't really like was that they got locked in. It's such a typical overplayed scenario, you know, locked in the it's called locked in the elevator, basically, where you're locked in an elevator with a character that you have a problem with or need something to clear out, or there's a conflict. So you're locked in a tiny space and you work out your issues. It's such an overplayed scenario. And yet it worked so well because, Hottie locking them in the vault and then those spikes going out Star Wars style. It worked well. And I, even though I saw it coming when they got locked in and I was like, and here we go, the overplayed scenario. Yeah. Well, at least she's not pregnant. That's an improvement. But the way the events in the vault played out, the way they talked, the way they didn't want to talk about it and still talked about it, worked so well in the context of their characters and the way they are used to communicating that in the end, I didn't mind that the writers had to use such an, you know, old and unoriginal plotline. But still, you know, they did it well. I love Ichabod and Abby, basically, together.
I did mind the fact that he has now been in our time for, you know, well over a year, I would say now, and he still hasn't seen Star Wars. Excuse me? Hello. You should have known that right away. But I liked, I mean, going to some of the things you said, there's some quotes that they said right there when he says, when they say it's easier to act than talk. And that's what they've been running on. They've both been just acting and not talking and communicating to each other, which is something fans always hate. We're yelling at the screens going, if you would just talk, if you would just tell these people that you say you trust, you know, this problem would be averted. And then even when she says, are you having a moment? And he's like, I believe I am. And you think, you know, it's one of those Ichabod Crane moments where everything that he knows from the past is going to come back and magically help them and save them. And oops, he did it again, pressing the wrong button. I think it is a cliche to have them trapped in that. They did handle it in this way of they both thought they're just blazing through and they can act and not talk. They can have that moment and just, he's right and he was wrong. It brought up their faults quite well, I thought.
The way Abby knew how to direct and focus Ichabod's knowledge of the man into their exit strategy really showed that, yeah, talking's not as easy as acting, but they still know what to say to each other. And it really gives hope to the viewers and the fans and everybody that their relationship, their dynamic, basically, isn't as broken as we were afraid, right?
Yeah.
As we feared. Those cracks that appeared in the episode with Orion can be fixed, can be healed. So let's hang out. But yeah, despite the cliche things, they managed. It's like with Ichabod and Katrina in Date Night. Not everything's fixed, but I do believe a lot more got fixed between Ichabod and Abby in this episode than between Ichabod and Katrina. Mostly because there were less issues for them to work on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when they came together again, it felt, you know, yes, they are going back to that seamless, flawless dynamic. We'll see in the next episode whether or not that trust and that communication and not assuming you know what the other one is going to do really works out, or whether or not it was a one-time thing. I don't know what I prefer, though. What do you prefer? The one-time fix or an ongoing problem?
I want them to still have those difficulties because it's real. To have everything quick fixed or to always be happy, joy, is not real. But also for them to always have tension isn't real either. I think this has set up a nice pattern where they know they're now, it's not going to be so cut and dry. They're going to have these conflicts, but they've now told each other, we need to talk. We need to keep each other in the loop. We need to work together, even if we're doing things separately. We have to know why we're doing things separately. Not to check in, not to get permission, but for the whole picture. I like where they've put them. And yeah, Katrina and Crane are definitely much more complex, but you have all sorts of different trust issues and marital issues that have come into play. I wonder if Katrina could get him to go back to yoga. See, little things like that. I love those little throw-in lines because it feels real. That's what you do. At least I know I do things like that because I'm very much a Chandler. Things start getting tense. I throw out a line like that to help dispel some of that tension. So I loved him when he was saying, I'm still not going back to yoga. I'm not doing that again. Because it felt very real to me.
Yeah, and it made me want to rewatch that particular yoga scene because it was so precious.
It's actually my lock screen on my computer, of them doing the handstands. But I see that every time I turn on my computer because it just makes me happy in many, many, many ways. I like how they've been working through things. Somebody, though, who's not as good about working through things. Somebody who doesn't want to join the team, because I think if we'd stuck around a little bit longer in karaoke, if we'd seen a little bit more of that first scene after Abby had hers, we would have probably seen Jenny get up there and sing a little something. We had Hottie make a quick exit because he had to go to the broker. This is our Hottie episode. This is where we get to finally learn a little bit more about Mr. Nick Holly and what is kind of going on with him. And we find out that he was, I guess, partially raised. The woman does not look that old that she would have raised him. It must have been like older aunt-ish type thing. Carmilla Pines is her name. And as I said, I think Carmilla Pines for Hottie McHotstud. Let's get into that story. Let's talk a little bit about Hottie.
I am still not calling Hottie, Nick, Nicky, Nicole. I don't care what his first name is. He will and forever remain Hottie McCotstad. And that is my decree that I'm issuing.
It's like Sex on the City. You don't call him John. He's Big. That's just his name. He's
what
Mr.
do you
Big.
Mean, John? Who's John?
Who the heck is John? Yeah. When she kept going, Nikki, oh, and Nikki. Yes, I'm like, oh, I just want to throw up all over you.
I get it. I can follow the story when everybody calls him Holly. Because mm-hmm. it's close enough to Hottie for me to yeah. ignore the, you know, not Hottie sounds. But Nikki? Who's Nikki? And when she first referred to him as Nikki, I was like, who are you talking to?
Like, yeah.
Is there another guy in the scene? What is going on? Exactly. Who is Nikki?
Exactly.
It was so confusing. But I have to tell you, I love this actress. I loved her on Spartacus. I loved her on Warehouse 13. She is brilliant. Jamie Murray, I think. And she was on Defiance, the sci-fi futuristic thing.
So, CV, yes.
Yeah, CV, sci-fi. So
CV.
Let's talk, say CV one more time. CV. So she is brilliant, and the fact that they got her to guest star, I am really happy with the fact that, spoiler alert, she escapes. Because yeah. that opens the door for her to come back. And I am actually looking forward to possibly maybe seeing her in season 3. If anytime. But, first
I
of
hope
all,
not before. I not hope before, not before.
Yeah, not before. I liked all the new layers that we got with Hottie. Because we got used mm-hmm. to him, being this mercenary slash, hey, I have a shiny object that will probably save the day. I could give it to you, say, for a smile lately.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey.
And yeah. suddenly, we get to learn more about why he's doing what he's doing. And, mm-hmm. and I think in a way it explains his, unwillingness to get involved in the mission mm-hmm. that Abby and Ichabod had. Because when he was talking to Jamie, what was the character's name?
Carmilla.
Carmilla. When he was talking yeah. to Carmilla, I had this eureka moment. It was like, this is why you have trust issues, because
exactly,
the family
yeah.
that you had before did bad things, and oh my god, it all makes sense. And I liked it. I don't know. I know when he first showed up and he had so much screen time that we were going like, Jenny and Irving are main characters. They're in the credits. How come this new hot guy, mm-hmm. not that we mind, is getting so much more screen time? And this
yeah, we're not upset about that. We just want him to be in the credits if he's getting that much time, and we yeah. want Jenny and Irving
and
back for him.
This is a second major episode for Hottie, the succubus mm-hmm. one being the first one.
Right.
And I really do feel like the succubus one, he was an incidental main character, so to speak, of that episode, because it was
incidental
so,
Hottie.
Yeah, incidental
he was an incidental Hottie.
Yeah. But this episode was designed from start to end to be a Hottie episode.
Mm-hmm.
And while I appreciate it a lot, especially the scene where he was being turned into a demon, because of course you need to perform a ritual to turn him into a demon while he is shirtless. It is a
Yay.
Ultimate truth. Everybody knows that. This is how rituals go. But at the same time, I'm a little afraid of why we got a Hottie episode. Why we got his backstory. Because Sleepy Hollow writers, they don't do stuff without a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind
hopefully,
of...
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully. But hey, looking at their track record, they are yet to do a major thing without a reason.
Better than our other podcast, Gotham.
Yeah. So it comes, you know, it's reasonable to assume that they're having something in store that it's mm-hmm. going to be, you know, hottie, and possibly his backstory is going to play into that big thing that's coming. And I have to worry about that because, well, I already know that Irving is going to get hurt seriously and there's pain and sorrow in his future. So I don't want my other favorite, pretty, shiny baby to, you know, get involved in that. I need at least one of them intact, relatively undamaged, to, you know, keep me over, to keep me happy with the show while the other one gets hurt and, you know, sent to hell, possibly. So
I see what I liked. What I liked was that he did seem to now have more of a reason. Which I think is ironic. He seems to have more of a reason to be a part of the Scooby Gang, right as he has an episode where he's going off to save, I'm going away basically to keep the rest of you safe. So right as he leaves, that's when he has a reason, I think, really to be part of the Scooby Gang here. And I like though that we had little hints of Jenny's past connection with him. That Jenny, she knows his backstory. She knows about Carmilla. Not that Carmilla is a demon. She knew Carmilla before she had changed, or knew of Carmilla from before that. So I'm hoping that it opens the door for not Jenny backstory, but more Jenny story.
Mm.
She did some great incidental things. Like I love when she called out Abby about the weirdness between Abby and Crane. You know, she sees it. She's good at calling that out. She's good at helping move the story along. She's really developing more, but she needs more of a story. So I'm hoping the fact that we are opening all these doors on what she knows and what she's a part of is going to help. So I liked that. I like that Hottie wasn't just a hot guy in this one that just happened to be, you know, doing stuff. So I like I said, I find it ironic that I have more investment in him being around now that we have an episode where he's leaving.
Yeah.
I do hope that this part of the story with Carmilla and everything doesn't come back this season. I'm hoping that goes next season when maybe he is in the opening credits. Hopefully nobody is leaving the opening credits. I don't want anybody that's in the opening credits right now to leave. They all can stay intact on there. But I'd like to see him join because I think now he's actually making a part of this. Because we're also seeing that emotional connection. He's been very mercenary or very connected because, hey, it's Jenny. Hey, it's Abby. Hey, I'm battling with Crane. You know, we have to go this mano a mano thing. We've now seen him guilted, but also feels that personal obligation to try and help Carmilla, who he thinks, you know, she pulls it over on him. It's like, please, this is the only way I can become human again. Ha 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 ha. Never trust a demon when they say that, you know. He's a little bit blinded there. But he, you know, seeing a little bit more of that heart, that vulnerability that he has.
I want to kind of connect this a little bit to the other podcast that we're doing, Gotham. And I'm hoping that the reason why Hottie is leaving, I'm going to miss him terribly, is because things are coming up that he wouldn't fit in.
Right.
So instead of putting him in episodes where he doesn't fit in or, you know,
gratuitously, yeah,
unnecessary that it would be jarring, they gave him an organic way to stay out of a couple of episodes before he comes back, of course, because he comes back, right? 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 Right.
He comes back. He comes back.
Hopefully
shirtless.
Hopefully, shirtless. If not, I have Google. It's okay.
I just have to make a little side note. Last night I saw a Dancing with the Stars show, and that's what all the women were going. We love the dancing, but Val, take off your shirt. So we can appreciate your talent while also wanting you to be shirtless, just so you know.
But, and I'm hoping that this is the reason why he left, and that his return that is coming up, writers, do not fail me, is going to have a reason for it that it's, that is equally as good and makes as much sense, character-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's another thing that I have to look forward to, which isn't that bad. Overall, minus a certain pregnancy episode, it's been a strong season, gotta say.
It really has. I like how, you know, Hadi is, I think, so desperate to, I want to say almost, I don't want to say turn his life around, but to make a turn, to make a change in the way he was going. I think that our Scooby gang has shown him something that he was missing and wanted, and he really wants to be a part of it, but he also doesn't know how to be a part of it, and he really wants to change. That when Carmilla comes up and, you know, she tells her story about how she was turned by the thuggies when she was out looking for Hadi. You know, she's pulling that heartstring. She's pulling that little thing. You know, it's because of you, looking for you.
Yeah.
Wanting to find you that this happened and doing the whole one and done. It's like he wants to believe this. You know he doesn't really believe it. You know he doesn't. He's too smart, but there's something in him that's blinding it. And to the point when, you know, Abby's being threatened with those nails, those little acid nails that she has. And he realizes, the only way that I can save these people that I now care for is to turn on them. But I'm still going to say, you know, you're resourceful. You're going to find a way out. Don't worry. Everything will be fine. But I have to save you. And companioning it with that end when he leaves. I think they are opening the door. I mean, it has cliches, but Sleepy Hollow is not known for not doing cliches. It's just, I think, and you think, that they do them with a twist that that brings a different side to it. So I'm really looking forward to that and seeing what he can really bring when he's not just being, you know, the scoundrel.
And I like the way that his character grew over the course of the season so far. I mean, let's not lie to ourselves and to people who listen to our podcasts. He started as Hadi McHotstad. He was nothing more but eye candy.
Yeah. It was nice eye candy. He's just eye candy. Yeah.
He is still a nice eye candy. But he has this depth to him. This complexity to his character that makes us care for him beyond, ooh, hello there. So I really hope they're bringing him back. I'll be better.
You know, and what? Just like when you thought, they can't kill my Irving. They killed my Irving. How dare they kill my Irving? And I'm like, no, 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 no. Here's the things that they've dropped. There's no way. They've set it up perfectly for him to come back.
Hadi is not a series regular.
But you know what one shot that, I mean, I made note of, because again, I have notes. The one shot that I made a note of that made me go, he's coming back. I don't know exactly when. But he's coming back. And honestly, I mean, I would love to see him more. But if, like you said, he doesn't fit into the story organically, I'd rather he not come back till the next season than be shoved into a story just because. But the one shot that made me go, he's coming back, is when he basically comes to the rescue and sacrifices himself for Abby and Crane. But Abby's the one that's got the acid nails, you know, to her throat. And gets them locked in there. He tells Abby, don't come after me. And he closes the door. And there's this really long shot of his hand on the door. Like his hand lingers there. Not because he's still pushing it closed. He's closed it. And it's still lingering there as this, almost like this connection that he has. His last time that he can, what he thinks, connect with these people. Maybe specifically Abby. Because we're still in this, who's going to go for, you know, who's going to go for? Are we doing Jenny or are we doing Abby? Is there going to be the sister conflict? Is there not? But that one shot, I mean, I'm counting it going, this is purposeful. This is not sloppy editing. This is not, you know, we didn't know what to do. We need a few more seconds in the show. Yeah, just leave his hand on the door. This is purposeful. So he's coming back.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to do something I didn't do when they killed Irving, and I'm going to trust you.
Uh-oh. I feel the pressure.
I'm going to trust you and think he's coming back.
You're notating the day, time, and place, right, that I said this?
Yes. Yes, I am. Because if he doesn't come back this season, and they don't say he's coming back in season 3, I am going to be very disappointed with you. That's A. And B, I'm going to be very mad at you for giving me hope where I shouldn't have any.
Can I tell you, here's where I kind of like, I have like a year-long reprieve. Because I said next season. I didn't say in the opening of next season. So until season 3 ends, whew, I still have a reprieve. So Matt Barr, if you can just come back sometime before the end of season 3 so Alex won't hurt me from 7 hours in the future, I would greatly appreciate it. Greatly, greatly. Now, I think they are. They've invested too much time in him to be a part of this show. And like you were saying, how many episodes we've had in him, and they're really setting it up, and they're trying to do, you know, we'll see how they deal with this whole Hottie Abby Jenny thing. You know, hopefully they don't go too stereotypical with it, but they're setting that up, and they've set up things with Crane. They've set up pretty much the only one that he hasn't had any kind of relationship, well, Irving, because Irving was locked up for quite a while. Pretty much the only one he hasn't had a relationship with was Katrina.
Which hopefully, when he comes back, as you say he will, is going to be rectified. And the thing is, he didn't really have a reason to develop a relationship with Katrina. Because she was this, a stranger, basically, you know?
Yeah.
He had...
She was busy with Abraham, too.
So, you know, he didn't have a reason to develop a relationship. Plus, I don't really think Hottie trusts people easily for reasons that were made obvious in this episode.
And magnified in this. Oh my gosh, the person that raised you then turns into, you know, a Vitala Kali demon thing that wants to destroy everybody and you. And I don't think his trust issues are getting any better.
So, he doesn't trust people easily. He trusted Ichabod and Abby and Jenny only because he had life and death experiences with them. And they saved each other over and over again, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have the same experiences with Katrina. So we can't really expect him to go and, I don't know, have a drinking game with her. Or, I don't know, a session of beer pong. I don't know.
Okay, so we've had his goodbye with Abby with the hand on the door. Which to me is a big one. But his actual final goodbye was with Jenny. Lucky Jenny.
Mm.
Lucky Jenny. Getting that little kiss goodbye.
And I liked it. It broke my heart. Like, into a million pieces. I was like, don't go anywhere. Stay here. Why do you want to leave my shiny happy place? Where are you going? And it broke my heart in a way that Jenny knew it was a goodbye before it became a goodbye.
Yeah. She's a smart woman.
Yeah, and I feel like even if he didn't say goodbye, she would know that he didn't want to come back. You know? And I felt like their history together, their past that they're shared and the relationship that they no doubt had in the past, really influenced what he said. Because I feel like with Jenny, there was no need to pretend anything. Because she knows him too well. Like, she knew this was a goodbye before he said anything. And I feel like if it was Abby instead of Jenny, he would not say all those things. I think he would try to play it cool, like way cooler, and, you know, not to make himself look as vulnerable. If it was Abby or anyone else, but with Jenny, he knew he could do this like this and break my poor little black shriveled heart, like the terrible person that he is. I don't know. I want to rewatch that goodbye scene and cry some more. Even though I didn't cry, but it was, I like scenes that are subtle and yet intense at the same time. Scenes that are, simple in their construct, but carry so much emotional weight. I enjoy them from, you know, creative perspective. So no matter how heartbreaking it is for me as a fan and, you know, a big fan of Holly and his talents, it is an incredible scene. It's a powerful one, and it stands right there with all the subtle scenes that we talked about and the first scene of Winter premiere among them. I like the way Sleepy Hollow does those little subdued small things that carry so much punch in them, basically. I really do, which is why I will probably rewatch that scene a couple of times just to remember how much it hurts.
Yeah. The way they did him in this, I really did like. I mean, we have him sacrificing himself for Abby and Crane, and him protecting Abby, don't come after me. Don't look for me. We have him taking Jenny's phone so that they can track her. It's like he's still... That wasn't an accident. He didn't accidentally take this and happen to have her phone on him so that they could track her. And side note, Hottie has a hot car, too, that Ichabod was liking quite a bit there.
He and I both...
Horsepower.
Like, that is the car that could be in Fast and Furious.
Yeah, that was awesome. He's like, forget your SUV, Abigail. I'm taking this one out for a ride. But it's not a coincidence that Hottie takes Jenny's phone so that they can track him. And it's not a coincidence, these things. Again, with the mirror thing that they do, that they didn't do in the date night episode that they should have, but the fact that we had the moment when Crane paused with Henry. At the end of mid-season there, when he had the chance to kill Henry, but he didn't, he paused. We have the same thing here happening with Hottie. When he pauses, he could have taken that blow against Carmilla.
Yeah.
But he does pause, and that's what helps her get away. And he has this weight on him. You know, his goodbye to Abby really was down in the vault, even though he sees her again when they do that battle. But we end it with not with him saying goodbye to her or to Crane or anything else, but that moment when Jenny catches him returning the plans and he says, friends don't steal from friends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he believes this now. He knows he's part of this. He not only took her phone hoping, but they actually did come for him. They actually were there. They had his back. They are there for him. And he really believes that they're friends. And so I think that's the other part that really goes into he's coming back. Because they've accepted him. Everybody across the board has accepted him. So I think that just... It showed a lot, I think, when it came to Hottie. That we needed to see. I think.
Yeah. Hopefully he's going to be a series regular in season 3.
He will.
And not the, you know, death of the finale that hits everybody. Fingers crossed.
I think he will. I think we're going off. Hopefully we're going off for him to set up a really great story. Like you said, we're not going to just gratuitously see him unless he wants to walk through the scene shirtless just for no good reason. Just in the middle of the apocalypse, we're taking a pause. Thank you very much for that hot moment. Back to the battle. You know, okay.
I wouldn't mind that.
Just don't gratuitously put him in there just because. And it's like, you make no point in the story. I think he's going off to actually start a next bigger story. Because I think what we need now is we had so much Hottie in the first half of the season and not enough Irving. I think these last few episodes and the finale, I think this is Irving's. Irving's the one we need to be most worried about, I think, because this is going to be big for him. And I think we're just setting Hottie up for next season.
I always worry about everybody, except for Abby and Ichabod, because they are awesome and they do not take anything.
I'm going to finish this with one little moment that I loved that really had nothing whatsoever to do with the episode. But we know we love these little moments that they have. When Crane and Katrina were talking about Mary Poppins, ooh, a witch in housework hardly seems progressive. I love that Kat's getting into some of these things too. I thought that was just, these little moments are what really sell it for me, sell the show 100%. So
yeah, it reminded me of the one time when they watched reality TV together.
Yeah.
It was.
But I'm with Crane on the Ichabod, though, on this one. It's like, no, I love the fact that, okay, he's seen Mary Poppins, but he hasn't seen Star Wars. Oh, wait a second. I'm getting a little more incensed. You need to see both. But him trying to explain Mary Poppins, that's just...
And she seems to enjoy what she's doing, so, you know.
She does. You know, a spoonful of sugar and all. It's wonderful. This leads perfectly into the title of next week's episode. This brings to the end our marathon 2015 Sleepy Hollow podcast ketchup marathon thing here. Not ketchup as in ketchup and mustard, but
catching up.
Getting caught up. Yeah. Caught up. So that brings into this. We're going to go back on our regular schedule, which will still be late. We won't be recording the next episode till the end of the week because of my schedule, because I actually have a life that doesn't.
Say it isn't so.
It doesn't jive with the future timing, so we're delayed until the end of next week. But next week's episode is called Spellcaster. So I think, are we looking a little more Katrina story coming in, you think? I mean, who's our resident witch?
I think it might be about, I know nothing about the episode. I'm hoping this means we're going back to that separate Abraham from Horseman of Death plot.
Yeah, we need to do that.
Yeah, hopefully. So, we'll see.
We're coming up on that. That is our Groundhog Day. Do you have Groundhog Day?
No, but everybody saw the movie with Bill Murray, so we know what it is.
That's not how every Groundhog Day works, but yeah, that's the basic on it. You know, they've calculated it out that, like, some people have guessed for him to learn all of those things, like how many years it actually was that he repeated the same day, because to be able to learn the languages and the piano and this and that and the other, all this stuff. Some of us geeks have way too much time on our hands. So the next episode is Spellcaster, and then we have 4 episodes left. That, What Lies Beneath, Awakening, and the finale title is to be announced so far. That is what?
I've read somewhere it's called Tempus Fugit. I don't know how you guys pronounce Latin, but Tempus Fugit is the way we do. It's about time, so.
That one will be on my birthday.
And it's going to be epic.
What, my birthday or the episode?
Both.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Thank you so much for joining us for this podcast marathon. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did, although Alex and I have been, we need the break, don't we? We're just shy of 5 hours of straight podcasting, people. This is how much we love you. This is how much we love all of you out there that we do this. We spend our Saturday doing this.
I mean, yes, of course.
We love our show, too, so we want to talk about it If you like us, please let us know. You can go tell us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks, email us scififorchicks@scififorme.com, or call the hotline 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. And make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes using the link on this post and on the website. You can also find us on the podcast platform of your choice. Alex, you ready to record another one?
Oh, sure. Let's do this.
We're going to start a marathon, like 24 hours of straight podcasting. I don't know if our computers could handle it, though. So
probably not. But let's do this anyway.
Okay. Maybe we'll have to do that. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex. I will see you next time. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media.